Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. This is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert players, coaches, and fans follow.
Ooh-wee.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Jim Levitt and the Oregon Ducks have officially parted ways, and his buyout is $2.5 million. I gotta be honest, because I was asked about this a lot over the course of the last week. Are you shocked by this news? No. This is some of the least shocking news I've ever heard. The timing is a little bit off. It's a little bit weird to wait through the whole recruiting cycle, but at the same time, I think from the outside, there are a lot of people who think, well, God, maybe they waited to kind of manipulate recruits or trick recruits and then make this move, and they're stuck. This goes back a long way, and this is kind of a longer story, to be honest. When Taggart first left for Florida State, there was a power struggle, and I think fans are relatively aware of that Jim Levitt wanted the head coaching job, that Mario Cristobal wanted the head coaching job, but Levitt also was considering leaving, and we know that Levitt has been considering leaving off and on for quite some time. When Cristobal was promoted to head coach, Levitt wasn't happy, and I don't think that's a secret either. I think the piece that people don't maybe know is Levitt kind of let it be known to recruits that he wasn't happy. That during that struggle, and then Cristobal's promoted, that Levitt let it be known to recruits that he was targeting, that he was a little bit unhappy with what was going on at Oregon. Well, that's not okay. You can be disappointed with what goes on with recruits. They can't know about it. The energy at Oregon, especially when that Taggart departure took place, has to be high. You have to still be fired up about Oregon, because those kids are suddenly looking at maybe leaving. And we had Braden Lindsay and MJ Cunningham, two players that were from the state of Oregon, being recruited by Oregon, talking about it in studio, that Taggart wasn't real honest with them. They weren't real sure what was going on. Well, during that time, Levitt was less than thrilled. That can hurt a recruiting class. So that upset some folks. And really, truly, the defensive staff at Oregon has never really gotten along since. That's the reality. There's been some infighting. There's been some struggle for power. I don't think that's a secret. During this entire recruiting cycle, Jim Levitt took a back seat. Now, I don't know if that's because Cristobal knew that Levitt rubbed some recruits the wrong way when he didn't get the head job and kind of wasn't real happy, or if he just took a back seat in recruiting, because let's face it, Jim Levitt wasn't the most dynamic recruiter at Oregon anyway. They have an all-star lineup of recruiters, with Coach Cristobal, Coach Arroyo, Coach Hayward, Coach Salavea, right? And then you bring in Trey Watson. You've got Devel Winters, who, and I think Hayward confirmed this in the interview last week, was kind of the inventor of putting parents in uniforms on official visits, which is becoming a big thing. The odd man out in that group, the guy that isn't the dynamic recruiter, was Jim Levitt. So Jim Levitt in this entire recruiting cycle took a back seat. He was not the primary recruiter for a single prospect. Now, when you have a lot of young coaches who are all working their way up in the coaching world, the other piece is any coach can leave at any time. You have to know that. Coach Hayward could get offered a head or a defensive coordinator job somewhere, and I'm talking about over the last couple years. Coach Salavea could have been offered a defensive coordinator job. Coach Arroyo could have been offered a bigger job somewhere else. It could have happened. So to prep for that, Coach Cristobal and Coach Hayward, again, last week talked about it on the show, multiple coaches were assigned to every single recruit. Maybe Michael Johnson leaves the wide receiver coach at the end of the year. Well, they had to address wide receiver. So they couldn't just have Michael Johnson be the primary recruiter for all the receivers. It wouldn't have worked in case he left. Turns out he did, and they still signed a very good receiver core. They got four talented receivers. So Cristobal, knowing that potentially people could leave, had multiple coaches recruit every major target. And not only that, but Leavitt didn't really take the lead for anybody. Coach Hayward very much involved in Kayvon Thibodeau. When you look at Cale Millen, the quarterback, that was a recruit mostly of Arroyo's. Coach Cristobal had some guys. Everybody took their guys. Coach Salavea had guys. The one coach that didn't really have anybody was Coach Leavitt. And not only is, you know, he's a different personality. I mean, we know that. That's not, again, things that aren't a secret. The Oregon defensive coaching staff didn't always see eye to eye. They didn't always get along. They weren't always on the same page. And Coach Leavitt was a little bit different on the recruiting trail. He wasn't going to be for everybody. Not everybody would meet Coach Leavitt and think, that guy totally vibes with me. Coach Hayward, Coach Salavea, Coach Cristobal, even Coach Arroyo, those guys are known for that. It doesn't matter what living room they walk into, they light it up. Coach Leavitt, his reputation is, he's known for drinking a lot of Pepsi. Those are very different. Those are very different reputations. So timing-wise, is this bad for Oregon? No. Is there a recruit right now looking at things going, man, I did not see this coming, and I wish I wouldn't have signed? No. Kayvon Thibodeau tweeted, "I stop asking about the transfer portal. I haven't even thought about it." Coach Leavitt was not the primary contact. And he wasn't so in charge of the defense single-handedly, where he was the only guy with massive input in the play calling, that he couldn't be replaced. Oregon knew this might come. Oregon was ready for this type of move because Leavitt wanted out. Leavitt openly looked for other jobs. I mean, that's not a secret. He openly was looking at other jobs, potentially head coaching job. And when you do that, and your coach on the flip side, your coach Cristobal, you have a defensive coordinator who's well liked, well wanted, and isn't totally thrilled about not being the head coach. You know he might want out, so you have a contingency plan in place. I was asked about this a lot. Is there any way that Oregon waited to part ways, that they knew this was coming and they waited until this class was done to announce it? And I think the answer there is absolutely not. And the reason I think that, again, is Leavitt wasn't primarily involved in recruiting, and even guys who were primarily involved in recruiting with a kid weren't the sole recruiter. You know, there was no situation where it was like, man, if Coach Arroyo goes anywhere, I'm decommitting. He's the only guy I talk to. If Coach Hayward goes anywhere, now, I think if Coach Hayward would have gone somewhere, if Coach Salavea would have gone somewhere, Oregon might have lost recruits because they liked those guys, but it wouldn't have been because that was the only guy I talked to. Coach Cristobal planned this out. And it was really a smart move. Preston, filling in as the the producer today. You follow Oregon pretty closely. Jim Leavitt, just outsider perspective, I know you don't like cover the team or go to a bunch of practices or anything. Did you ever think when you heard Jim Leavitt, you thought, well, they're going to lose if he leaves, they're losing a big-time recruiter?
I didn't. I know how much respect the current players have for him, Troy Dye being one of them, obviously one of their best players. You see all the time Troy Dye praising him on social media and even in postgame. I covered Oregon for 3 years at a local TV station in Eugene, and the current players love him. But you mentioned it earlier, the Kayvon Thibodeau tweet, when I saw that, that's when it was like, okay, I don't think this is actually going to affect Oregon that much, at least certainly on the recruiting trail.
Right.
Because when the headliner of your class, literally the highest ranked player in program history to commit to your school, says, hey, universe, I haven't even thought about the transfer portal. The tweet was something to that effect.
Right.
That's when I knew, okay, Oregon's fine. If the headliner and the five-star says that, then yeah, there's probably something more to this. And a lot of these other coaches like Salavea and Hayward, I hear a ton about how amazing of a recruiter Salavea is, that these guys were probably super involved. And you know it better than I do as far as the recruiting scene. And Thibodeau's tweet kind of reflected that.
Right. And you look at coaches, and I think generally coaches, you know, you look at Oregon State staff, and I think that's the problem with Oregon State staff is they have a lot of X's and O's guys, and I don't know if they have a single big-time recruiter. Mm-hmm. And now you go and you look at Oregon's coaching staff. And I think the guy you said, tried and true, proven, gets the job done as a coordinator or head coach. He has the track record. He's clearly an innovator. was Jim Levitt on defense. Mm-hmm. Now you've got a head coach who's fairly new, works with the O-line, not a big-time innovative offensive mind. Great recruiter, no mm-hmm. question. And Mario Cristobal's done a great job. I'm not knocking Cristobal. I'm just saying mm-hmm. proven track record on the resume. Mm-hmm. Coach Arroyo is not a proven offensive coordinator where you go results. More of a recruiter in terms of his reputation, which way he leans. And now defensive coordinator, if you go with Salavea or Hayward right now, they're younger. Their reputation lies more, and because they've been more position coaches than defensive coordinators, their reputation lies more in recruiting. So Oregon State has a lot of X's and O's guys that may not be able to recruit real well. And Oregon has this staff of really, really good recruiters. Mm-hmm. And the question next season is going to be, particularly now on defense, we already know offense is a little bit of a question. Because there was some lack of feel and that lack of rhythm and
yeah,
chemistry.
That bowl
in that
game did not leave people with a fun taste in their mouths.
And now you go into next season and you've got some questions about the offense. I mean, there's a reason that right. You know Oregon is reportedly looking at an offensive consultant there. Now you're going with a new defensive coordinator as well. So you got a staff of recruiters and not a lot of proven X's and O's guys. I'm not saying they can't do it. I'm just saying we haven't consistently seen it from almost anybody on this staff now. New wide receiver coach. You know, you've got Cristobal's a fairly new head coach. You've got Arroyo, who's an unproven offensive coordinator. There are a lot of people who are unhappy with him. You've got Salavea and Hayward, and it's questionable. Either one that becomes a defensive coordinator, it will be a proving ground for them, not, oh, that's a hire that for 10 years has done things. There's a lot of question marks going into a team that on the roster, on the depth chart, has a whole lot answered.
Mm-hmm.
But suddenly the coaching staff has questions. It's an interesting piece because you don't often see that where it's like, hey, everyone's coming back, except really we don't know what we're getting out of this coaching staff. Yeah. It's going to be an interesting dichotomy for Oregon this next year.
It is. And is that modern college football? Does recruiting matter more than X's and O's? And Oregon, I mean, at least at this point, is proving that answer is true, because you could say Mark Helfrich, for example, is a really good offensive mind. Look what he's doing with the Bears. I know Oregon fans don't want to hear that, but a lot of people who are in the industry have a lot of respect for Helfrich's X's and O's, but the recruiting fell off so dramatically for Oregon during his years, especially on defense, that look what that defense turned into. And, you know, you could point to Brady Hoke taking a 3-4 scheme and turning into a 4-3, but that's what I'm saying.
To your point, in the years that Mark Helfrich was the head coach for the full cycle, they did not have a first or second team all Pac-12 player for that entire span out of that recruiting group.
That's amazing.
Now he coached for, like, he coached in Buckner and Armstead were there, I believe, still. I believe those were the two that were there.
Yeah.
But he wasn't the primary recruiter. They were brought in when Chip Kelly was the head coach.
Yep.
While Helfrich was the head coach, they didn't recruit an all-conference guy that performed to an all-conference level at all while he was there.
Mm-hmm.
That speaks to the drop-off that there was recruiting-wise. And you look at Florida State, and Florida State's a perfect example. Florida State clearly valued recruiting over X's and O's. I think even in Taggart's time at Oregon, people thought, man, how well does he really know the offense? Like, how well does he really understand things? But it was like, but man, he can recruit. He can really recruit. I think it matters more than it ever has. But at the end of the day, on my staff, and Oregon State's got it one way, and we'll find out this season if Oregon's got it the other way. I want to blend. Oregon State's got all X's and O's guys, no recruiters. And right now, in terms of proven reputation, Oregon's got all recruiters and no proven X's and O's guys. They could change that with a 10-2 season mm-hmm. right away, but we haven't seen it yet. I want to blend in my staff. I think that's the way you should ideally do it. Oregon just lost a big X's and O's piece here in the last couple days.
Yeah, and I mean, when they gave Jim Levitt that massive raise, they were paying him SEC D coordinator dollars. Some of those D coordinators in the SEC, Dave Aranda, LSU, some of those other guys, they make upwards of $2 million. I think Levitt was in the 1.5 range or so.
And what's funny is,
that's why it was so important for them to do that.
Last year, his role was more linebacker coach, which is why he has such a good relationship with Troy Dye. He has a good relationship with the linebackers. He was more of a linebacker coach. That this transition and the tension between this defensive staff has been brewing for a long time. This surprises no one. Mm-hmm. I think what does surprise people is that I think Oregon kind of knew this was going to happen quite a while ago. Whether it was Levitt's choice or Oregon's choice or Cristobal, I don't know who you want to, Oregon as a whole, we'll say. Mm-hmm. I don't think they knew who side it was going to be on or if it was going to be mutual. But at some point, there was going to be a divorce. It happened. I don't think the timing was planned in the sense of let's get through this recruiting class. I just think this is when it finally, it was time.
Yeah, the more I read about it, and I've read four or five different articles from different writers across the country, some local, some national, it does seem like the reason this happened is because there was a bit of a strain in the relationship there between Leavitt and Cristobal. At least that's what every writer is reporting their sources are telling them.
And the defensive, and the other defensive coaches.
Right, and I think that is the big thing. I mean, you know, Leavitt interviewed for the Oregon head coaching job. He was rumored to be in the running for Kansas State and Texas Tech in the offseason. Like, he's a guy who's clearly wanted to be a head coach. I mean, he's in his, what, 50s or even 60s now? Like, he's at that age where it's like it's time for him to be a head coach, you know, if he can get that job. And whether that was the tipping point or not, that's tough to say. Obviously, we're not behind closed doors, but everything I've read, everyone's sources are telling them that there was a strain in a relationship there between Leavitt and some of the other coaches.
No doubt, no doubt. Oregon added a big piece. Now, this doesn't address whether Leavitt's leaving. And again, I don't think it will have almost any impact on recruiting. But we can't chalk up today's commitment to a sign that it doesn't matter because he's an offensive player. But he is a big-time transfer from Penn State. We'll talk about him and how much do transfers matter. Are you excited about transfers? When you get a transfer player in Oregon's history, are you saying, yes, that's a big-time player? Or with this graduate transfer situation, are you starting to say, man, some of these guys haven't produced, whether it's Tabari Hines, Dakota Prukop, Scott Pagano. Are you excited about a transfer? Are you not? We're going to talk about that next segment on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
From five stars to unknown prospects, we cover them all. From Oregon Live, this is Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
The Oregon Ducks landed a commitment today, and I think the kid in itself is not a polarizing guy. Penn State graduate transfer wide receiver Juwan Johnson is a nice kid. I don't think you'll find anyone anywhere who says Oregon couldn't use a receiver. And he's 6'4", 230 pounds. So at the very least, he should be able to block, and he should be a big target that can go up and get a ball down the field at some point, right? I mean, that's bare minimum. But I think he brings about an interesting question, because as I post the story and as I read the comment section and I read Twitter, and maybe I should just stay out of that whole realm, but you see kind of a split with Oregon fan who says, yeah, I'm excited about him. This is a kid who had 700 yards receiving as a sophomore at Penn State, over 50 catches. If he's that guy again, now he was injured as a junior, had only like 300 yards receiving, but only really got time in about 3.5 to 4 games. So he accumulated almost 100 yards receiving in those games that he was healthy. So as a sophomore, 700 yards receiving, 54 catches, a touchdown. If he's that guy and he's healthy now, Oregon could desperately use him with Dylan Mitchell being gone and a whole lot of questions up and down that depth chart at receiver. And then the other side of Oregon fan, and I'm interested to know what you think on the text line, 55305, says, you know, Oregon's gone down this path before. They just went down this path last year with Tabari Hines, and he didn't really do anything. And he was really productive at Wake Forest the year before he came over. Scott Pagano played in every game for a Clemson team that made it to the national championship game. Or 12 of the 14 games. And then he comes to Oregon, doesn't really do anything. Dakota Prukop picked Oregon over Alabama and Texas. Dakota Prukop was supposed to be the answer at quarterback. And then he really didn't. He lost the starting job, and he didn't really do anything. So I see the other side of Oregon fans saying, you know, graduate transfers are really hit and miss, and they're only there for a year. Preston, I tend to be on the side of, this is a kid who has proven to have done it. Yes, maybe it was 2 years ago and he battled injuries last year. But Oregon, when you look at that roster, they don't have a whole lot of guys who have a career 700-yard output, right, let alone one season where they had 700 yards receiving. I think it's worth taking the gamble because they need depth and experience, particularly when they are leaning on these true freshmen, these four-true freshmen they're bringing in to maybe potentially be starters. They need that veteran presence, and he's a guy who's done it on the big stage before. I think the gamble's worth it.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, losing Dylan Mitchell makes you amp up your urgency at that position even more in the offseason, and they did that with the recruiting class, with Pittman and some of those other guys who are, you know, high-caliber guys in the recruiting circles who have, you know, 4 or 5 stars. But my thing with Oregon, man, is they have really, really struggled to have not even just elite receivers, but above average receivers over the years. So what they really struggled with last year was depth. I mean, you had Brendan Schooler, who was playing safety, switched over in the offseason to receiver. You had Jalen Redd, who I believe came in as a running back during the recruiting process, flipped to receiver, and he's like a 5'8", 5'9", kind of jitterbug type guy, but he wanted to play running back. They flipped him to receiver, so you just need bodies at this point, and you need bodies who have played in college, because you're probably going to end up relying on some of these freshmen. If any of them pop, that's great, but I don't know whatever happened to Brian Addison, but he would have been great, but that didn't happen with Oregon. And then the other, Jalen Hall, that ended up not happening with Oregon, I think for legal reasons, if I'm correct.
He's looking at like spending the rest of his life in prison.
Okay, that's not good. I knew it was a legal situation.
That wasn't hanging over him during his recruitment. It happened after.
Okay.
He showed up at Oregon in the spring. It wasn't going to work out. He left after a day, I think. And then that summer, allegedly, with a weapon, I believe, he broke into. I want to be real careful. I believe he broke into a house with a weapon. Not a good situation.
Right.
Jalen Hall's not playing college football ever again.
Okay.
Safe to say. But that's not on Oregon. He didn't have those legal troubles when he was being recruited.
Yeah, so that was tough. And I think Addison may have had an injury. And I know Tabari Hines had an injury. And that's what a lot of people are going to point to is, I remember, covering Oregon and Cristobal, and everyone was talking about how he had a knee injury that banged him up in fall camp. He only played in that one game, which was that Portland State game. And I remember he had a couple catches and I think even a touchdown in that game. But I would caution Oregon fans who are angry at the way the receiver production has turned out the last couple of years to know that a lot of that has been out of Oregon's control with regards to some legal issues and some injuries. And so, I think it's good. Take a chance on a guy who's proven it one of the better programs in the country the last couple of years.
My favorite amateur scouting, you did not do this. You're good.
Okay.
My favorite amateur scouting take is the Justin Herbert has totally regressed. He just locks on Dylan Mitchell take.
I know.
Because you're really showing that you don't understand when you give me that. You ask almost anybody who really watches football, and it's like, Oregon's receivers can't get separation. When they do, it doesn't matter whether it's Red, who got better at the end of the year. He was pretty good at the beginning of the year, then had some drop issues in the middle. Then he had a pretty good bowl game. I think he had 7 catches for 80 yards or something in the bowl game. But they had so many drop issues, even when they could get separation, that Herbert didn't trust throwing to anybody. You don't, as a quarterback, and he's not a guy who's afraid of getting hit. Some guys get afraid of getting hit, and then they do only lock onto their first option. As a freshman, he was able to go through his progression, option one, option two, option three, back to one, move my feet, roll out, there's two, looping back around, I got him. You don't go from that to a regression of Dylan Mitchell or die.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. The problem was he didn't trust his receivers, and I think for people who don't understand how far that receiver group has fallen and how problematic it was, is there are people who don't get it who think, man, Justin Herbert just isn't as good as anybody says. Justin Herbert is much better than he was as a freshman. He's a much better quarterback. He just has nobody to throw to.
Yep.
I think if you put him in a situation like, do you remember that Clemson team? Was it Clemson that had DeAndre Hopkins, Sammy Watkins, and Martavis Bryant all at the same time?
Yeah.
That's cheating.
Dude, Clemson gets some ridiculous receivers. Their receivers this year are insane.
Imagine having those guys with Justin. He'd be, are you kidding me? I've got three guys that are open on any play. He hasn't had that. And I think Juwan Johnson's going to come in and be a guy who he can rely on a little more. And I think you look at these freshmen that he's got coming in. Micah Pittman's like my favorite story of the Oregon recruits. They brought in 4 receivers, 3 4 stars and 1 3 star, J.R. Waters, who should be a 4 star. It's a crime. I'm angry about it. I don't want to go on that rant again. I've had him on the show and talked about it. Micah Pittman graduated in December. He could have enrolled in January. Do you know this story?
I don't.
He decided not to. His dad played in the NFL and was a running back. He set up like a boot camp at his house with a trainer and his coach.
Like little giant style with Spike.
Yeah. But like he actually can carry the fridge. Like, and he's training so that he can be the starter when he gets there in the spurt. Like he's like putting his body through a grind. So
and
he
that's
will
respect.
Be ready.
Oregon fans are going to love to hear that. I was going to bring up the point that, you know, a couple of years back, Charles Nelson's final season with Oregon, he was really good, but he got hurt. And Oregon's passing game took a massive dip once Charles Nelson got hurt. And it was because it was basically the same crew of receivers minus Dylan Mitchell that you saw this last year. Like people people forget how good Herbert is when he has a couple reliable options. I mean, the tight end got hurt. McCormick got hurt this year. Like, Breland seems to always have a club on one or both hands. Like, I don't know how you ever throw it to that guy. And when they had a healthy Charles Nelson, a healthy crop of tight ends, and Dylan Mitchell, I mean, it was a special passing attack. So it's just been the injury bug that's really bitten them the last couple of years.
We have a question on the text line. Do you think Oregon would rather have gotten Juwan Johnson or Puka Nacua, who committed to Washington? If you didn't follow that, mm-hmm. he was the MVP of the Polynesian Bowl. I think Juwan Johnson is a great player, but I think you'd be crazy not to. And the coaches know. Coaches are smarter than we are about this football thing. Everybody kind of knows that graduate transfers can be, even with high expectation, be a little bit of a crapshoot. You don't for sure know what you're getting. Puka Nacua was a proven top 10 receiver nationally. And even if all things being equal, Puka Nacua has 4 years of eligibility left. Juwan Johnson had one. I think Oregon would probably rather have Puka Nacua.
Oh, yeah.
With the 4 years and being a highly rated receiver. The interesting thing is Juwan Johnson and him are very similar in terms of their recruiting profile. Juwan Johnson, a U.S. Army All-American, one of the top 12 to 13 receivers in the entire country. Puka Nacua was number 8 on one side. I think he was a top 15 on the other. They're very similar coming out of high school. The question is, would you rather have the 1 year of Juwan Johnson or would you rather have the 4 years of Puka Nacua? And the answer is Puka Nacua, but Oregon's not shying away from Juwan Johnson. They're thrilled with that get. Mario Cristobal was his primary recruiter when he was down to Penn State and really Alabama towards the very end of his recruitment in the class of 2015. That relationship really served Oregon well in this one. And he sees playing time and he sees a first round NFL draft pick at quarterback that says that kid's got to throw for 3,000 yards or more. And he's got to throw those yards to somebody. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go in and try to haul those in and rack up some yards.
And kind of to that point, I have a question for you. We called a couple high school games together this year, and I always enjoyed kind of your insight on how the recruiting process works, particularly with skill position players like receivers. Cause if I'm a head coach, I have no idea how I could really evaluate a receiver. And I that's what I was going to ask you, is how tough is it to evaluate how good a receiver is? Because you might see some guy just mossing kids who are like 5'7", and you're like, dude, I don't know how good that guy is. Those DBs are like 5'7", 140. Like, that guy could be amazing, or he could be some guy just playing against overmatched competition.
And that's the really tough thing in a state like Oregon. And that's why you'll see coaches maybe shy away, all things being equal, get a guy from California or Florida, because it's like, that's a 4-star guy across from
him. It's more about the area.
Oh, yeah. And he caught him. Yeah. But you're looking for speed. You're looking for good hands. I look for a guy who will block, too, and it, depending on what offense you run. I want a guy who's tenacious. I want a guy who's not afraid to go over the middle. I'm looking to make sure that he runs good routes. You're looking for just a really sound football player that can make the electric play. I think the missing element for a lot of guys is nose for the end zone. And Dylan Mitchell had that. It's not even an ability to dance around or not dance around. It's not the dancing of it. It's the, I want it. Mm-hmm. If I catch the ball at the 14 yard line, I'm not going to slide. I'm going to fight in any way that I can, whether it's jitterbugging or just putting my head down and going. I want that end zone. I want it. It's my drug. I need it. Mm-hmm. And really, really good football players. Micah Pittman was like this. Wanted the end zone. It was in their blood. And there are some guys that have that, and you can tell watching him. It's like, it kills him that he got tackled at the 2. His team's going to score. He knows that. He's not selfish, but it's like, oh, somebody stop me from what I needed, what I have to have on Friday nights. Mm-hmm. And I think there are very few receivers who are like that. And when you get some like that, it's really fun to watch him play.
Yeah, Dylan Mitchell was special, man. Oregon's going to miss him.
They definitely.
Some of the highlights that he had last year. Hey, he broke some ankles against UW, too. I mean, it's one of the best secondaries in the country. I went back and watched the tape of Mitchell against UW, and that was an absolute clinic. Yeah, we'll see if this Johnson guy, I mean, he's big, at least 6'4", 230. That's a blocking receiver at the very least.
At the very, very least. Fast Houston is one of the best 7-on-7 programs in the entire country. They announced today that they're bringing their team to Eugene on a visit. We will talk to Coach Roe Simon Jr. about who he's bringing to Eugene, when they're coming, and what Oregon fans can potentially expect building a pipeline to Texas. Next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
From game tapes to junior days to recruiting visits, this is where it happens. Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick, featuring Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
We've talked about 7-on-7 a lot on this show, and some of these teams out of LA, out of Houston, out of various cities in Florida are absolutely loaded. And today, earlier today, Fast Houston tweeted out that they're bringing their squad to Oregon. That's a big deal. So joining me to talk about it is Coach Rose Simon Jr. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing really well. So I saw a tweet today that you're bringing the crew to Eugene. When is that happening, and who gave you the idea?
Yeah, I had been thinking about it for the last few years when I had Jalen Waddle and all those guys on the roster about two seasons ago. And I've been, you know, talking with Coach Arroyo, and we decided that it's best for us to go ahead and make that connection this year and get those guys on campus.
2020 is a big-time class in Texas. It's big every year. But I know for Oregon, Texas is the new terrain. They did a really good job in California this past year. They killed it in California, beat USC, beat UCLA for a lot of really high-end talent. The next frontier for Oregon is Texas, and your program is a great place to start. How are you feeling that? Do you feel Oregon making that push? Does it feel like a concerted effort on the Ducks' part to get into Texas a little more?
Yeah, they're doing an excellent job with, you know, building relationships and you know, kind of identifying who the top guys and who can fit their program. So as I get to talk with the kids and they, you know, they want to go visit Oregon, they're very interested in Oregon and they high on the program, what the Ducks do offensively and defensively.
I just kind of want to give you a forum to talk about your team. South Florida Express is known as one of the best teams in the country. You guys beat them recently last year. You won the Pylon Atlanta tournament, which is one of the best 7-on-7 tournaments in the country last year. And this year's roster is loaded. Who are some of your top guys that you're planning on bringing to Eugene here soon?
Okay, I'm going to start out with Dwight McLovin. He's a cornerback at Trinity Christian. He plays corner, real long guy, about 6'3". He's probably the more premier corner in the state. Xavier Alfred, he's a safety. He's sitting right about 33 offers. Lorando Johnson, he's a defensive back. He's like a top defensive back in Dallas, so he's probably the number two DB in the state, right behind Dwight. And Bryson Washington is another top safety that we have on the team. He's a top three safety in the country. That's for my 2020 guys.
And when you
2021.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, Dwight McLuthern, you're listing these guys and saying he's one of the best players in Texas. And while that's certainly true, and I didn't mean to cut you off there, Dwight McLuthern is the number three corner in the nation with offers from Alabama, LSU, Texas, 20 elite offers. When you list these kids as some of the top talents in the state of Texas, they are also 4- and 5-star talents. The guys you just mentioned are almost exclusively blue chip prospects.
Correct.
2021
is Quindarius Davis. He'll receive out of Skyline High School. He just recently picked up an Oregon offer. He's gonna blow it real big soon. Cody Jackson, he's a sprinter. He's a receiver. He goes to Richmond Foster. And Latrell Neville, he's a receiver. He goes to Willie Ridge High School in Houston, Texas.
And again, they're only 2020 guys, but you look at a guy like Latrell Neville. He already has offers from LSU, Ohio State, Alabama, Arizona. He's got 30 offers already.
Right, correct.
How are you getting all these guys to play on your team? Is this a year-round 7-on-7 you can recruit? We see teams in Oregon that have talent from California, that have talent from Washington, that they bring in for these major tournaments. How are you able to get all these guys to play together? Because I imagine it is like an all-star showcase whenever you guys take the field.
Yeah, definitely it is. So, like, I identify those guys, you know, at an early age, you know, to see Dwight McLovin. He's been playing since 9th grade. So, you know, just like most of these guys, I've been having for 2 or 3 years. So, they've been sitting back, you know, playing behind other All-Americans. You know, so I already have them in the program, training them and developing them. You know, when it's daytime, they get out and come and play. You know, so it's just like a year-in, year-out thing over here at Fast Houston.
Fast Houston loaded with talent. The question that I know a lot of Oregon fans are going to ask is it realistic that Oregon can pull top talent out of Texas like they did with California last year? For people who might be skeptical, how realistic is it that some of these top kids would be willing to come to the West Coast, that would be willing to come to a program like Oregon instead of a Texas A&M? Is that a common thing that some of these kids are looking to maybe leave?
Yeah, you know, most of these guys, they really want to be recruited. They really want to find a lot of those the kids on the team that are interested in playing on the West Coast. You know, that's the reason why we're coming up there. You know, we're coming in during our spring break. You know, the time that they can get off and spend time with family and take a vacation, they want to come to Oregon. So I told them to pick the school they wanted to go to, and, you know, everybody, the majority said Oregon, so that's where we're going to go. So it's it's a very, very good chance that these guys can lead the state and go play elsewhere, like Oregon, something like that.
Talking to the coach of Fast Houston 7-on-7, Rose Simon Jr., about his loaded roster. They're going to visit Oregon. Do you have the actual date set, and are you guys taking a tour of multiple programs, or is this an Oregon and back or a USC Oregon and back? What's the schedule looking like in terms of the spring for you guys with visits?
Yeah, so it's looking like over spring break, we may visit USC, but I haven't got it, you know, I haven't got it situated yet. But for now, we're going to visit Oregon over spring break, stay out there a couple of days, and, you know, do the whole deal. And we may visit Nebraska during that week, too. But, like, this weekend, we go to Texas. The following weekend, we go to OU. We'll visit Penn State during the season. And a couple more big-time programs. Of course, we'll go to Alabama. We're going to visit Texas A&M. But as far as the West Coast, it's looking like Oregon, possibly USC. So,
okay, so Oregon fans who want to follow this program in the spring to see how the kids are doing and to see who some of these top prospects are, where can we follow you and where can we follow this program?
Yeah, you can follow the program on Twitter.com at Fast7V7. And my personal Twitter account is Roe Simon Jr. And we're active on Twitter. You know, we post a lot of great content, a lot of positive things, doing things for the community, stuff like that. So it's a good program. Trying to make an institution for the kids to be able to come in and do great and, you know, set the tone for the kids that's going to follow them.
And when we talk about different programs in Texas, and everybody thinks of the high school programs, 7-on-7 programs are the programs now a lot of the times that are doing these visits of major campuses. It's important to follow these 7-on-7 programs, and Fast Houston is going to be one to watch in the class of 2020 if you're an Oregon Ducks fan. Thank you so much for joining me, man. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Anytime.
That roster is loaded. That roster is loaded. He listed 7 names before he got to Latrell Nouvelle. And that kid has offers Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, LSU, Oregon, Oklahoma, Texas, Texas A&M, USC. He's a sophomore. It's unbelievable how good that team is. When you see that tweet, not only one, those kids are paying their own way. You can't take an official visit in the class of 2021. Those kids are paying their own way. So for him to open it up and say, where are we going, guys? Because I've got a ton of talent, and they're all 4- and 5-star guys. Where are we going? And for them to say, Oregon has to be one of our stops, that's a great sign for Oregon, because one of the things Oregon wants to do in 2020 and 2021 is make inroads in Texas. They cleaned up in California. They expect that to be a new normal. They got Thomas Graham Jr. They got Jalen Redd. They got D'Amador Lenore. Those guys were major beacons for these other kids who grew up watching those kids, loving those kids, and that you see it build and build. And now the next group's going to say, Johnny Wilson's a 5-star receiver from Calabasas in 2020. You know who his teammate is? Micah Pittman, who's going and trying to play early at Oregon as a receiver. That's how you build these relationships. That's how this grows upon itself. The next frontier for Oregon is Texas. And it's by building these kinds of relationships. A nice job early by Coach Arroyo. They will be visiting in spring. I am sure I will talk to Coach Simon again to make sure we have the full roster of who will be visiting. We got to talk about Portland State.
Showing the Vikings some love.
They deserve some love. They deserve some love. The number one recruiting class in all of FCS. At one point, it was considered the number one recruiting class in the history of the Big Sky Conference. We will talk about that and make some predictions here for some upcoming basketball games that are pretty important on the ladies' side next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
From 5 stars to unknown prospects, we cover them all. From Oregon Live, this is Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
Gotta give a little love to Portland State. The number one recruiting class in the FCS, the number one recruiting class in the history of the Big Sky Conference. beat out some FBS schools in the rankings. A really nice job by Portland State, who, again, I was very critical of about 2-3 years ago for just not being engaged in the recruiting process. They were going after the wrong kids in Oregon. They were trying to go after California kids missing, trying to come back around on the wrong Oregon kids too late, and ended up with third and fourth level guys in Oregon. They're fixing it. And not only that, they asked how to fix it. Not just me, a lot of people. How do we fix this? What do we do to build these relationships? Because right now we're not doing what we need to be doing. And people said, here's what you need to do. Here's the way you need to engage people. Here's the events you need to be at. Here's the way you need to make the Portland State brand exciting. Now, to their credit, they packaged it. They packaged a commuter school with no stadium as a cool place to be. And they deserve a heck of a lot of credit for that.
Yes.
That's impressive.
Yes.
Because I don't know anybody. I don't care Oregon with all the facilities they have. Certainly, you know, with the way Oregon State's struggling right now, that would be tough to say, okay, we're also going to make you a commuter school and you don't have a stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and recruit. No way. Yeah. There are a lot of staffs that couldn't do it, and they did it at a high level. They deserve a lot of credit, and they got some massive human being offensive lineman. I'd love to have him in studio just to stand next to him.
Dude, that's awesome. Yeah, on 247, they have him at 7 feet 440. And I know I saw him at 6'10", 440. Like, that's not a joke. That is not a joke, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know how a human like that is able to, you know, play through a football game, but I've seen some tape of him. I actually have. Like, people have been tweeting him out. He played right tackle in the tape that I saw. He took out a D-end, a linebacker, and a safety all in one play. And by the way, they have JoJo Seafele from Union, who I've seen a lot.
I was so excited.
He had like 5 touchdowns in their state title game. That dude can fly. And he had knee injuries in high school, so that's why he was kind of under-recruited. But he's legit. He's really good.
JoJo Seafele was one of the reasons I went, wait a minute, what is this? And then after signing day, we were able to really actually talk about what this is. How did you guys put this together? It's impressive. They also got Z Dennis Lee, and he has been open about this. I'm not throwing him under the bus. He's a kid. I almost never talk about this, but he doesn't care. He had some great issues as a freshman and sophomore. His head wasn't in the right place coming into high school. He figured it out. He was student of the month last month or 2 months ago at Oregon City with over a 3-point. If he makes it, that's a Pac-12 running back. He's that good. He was sensational when Swag and I went and saw him at Oregon City High School. Mm-hmm. Even if they don't end up with him, they got Elias Spence, a tight end I really like out of Oregon. They got Zach Mandera, who I really like out of Roseburg, a linebacker. They got a number of guys that I thought the Mountain West was going to like, man, if we have to go down our boards much at all, let's go get this guy. And they went and got him. And JoJo Seafele is one of those guys where you go, wait a minute, I know they're doing well in Oregon because I know all the Oregon kids. So it's like, yeah, that kid's really good. Great get for Portland State. But one of the Washington kids I knew about was JoJo Seafele. And by the way, Max Prep listed him as one of the most underrated players in the nation. Mm-hmm. They did a list of like the most overlooked players in the country, and he was on it. As was Nate Overholt, who didn't end up going to Portland State, but the Wilsonville quarterback, just to give people a local tie there. But JoJo Seafele was one of those guys on there, and Portland State went and got him. It's an impressive get.
Yeah, I like, it was fun. I watched 4 Union games in person, called like 4 Union games this year, and JoJo, he's just so underrated because he's a little bit small, but he, along with Lincoln Victor, who's their quarterback, who I don't know if he's decided or not yet. I think he said he was
going to
go.
I think he's going to Hawaii.
Okay.
How is he?
So he told me about a week ago when I was up there that he was going to, or 2 weeks ago, that he was going to go to either Eastern Washington or Hawaii. So it sounds like, yeah, he went to Hawaii. But those two guys can flat fly. Like, they have legitimate, like, Pac-12 speed. I don't know about the size. You can ask some college running back coach about the shiftiness or whatever, but as far as speed, those guys can fly.
And here's the thing, again, size, you have to have it at some point. Yeah. You can't have a team of 5 receivers that are all the size of or running backs that are JoJo Seafele and Lincoln Victor size. But one of the things I just talked about, good hands, good route running, and that just addiction to the end zone. Mm-hmm. You can see with both of those guys, those are 2 really good examples of 2 kids locally who had an addiction to the end zone. It killed them to not score every time they touched the football. You could see it just like bubble that they had to get there, that they were so addicted. They had to get back into that end zone for that glory and that score. Lincoln Victor and JoJo Seafele were 2 of those guys. I felt watching their film and then hearing from them and getting a chance to see them. Did you feel that? Did you see any of that where you see that like intensity when they get near the goal and it's like, that kid has to score?
I just saw it all season. I mean, Victor's like the 2-time MVP of that whole area. And Darian Chase, it's funny, Darian Chase was the highest rated recruit on that team. He went to Nebraska, but by far their best players in at the high school level. You know, you can tell me what you want about projecting because Chase is like 6'4", 220 or whatever. But their best players on in high school were certainly Victor and Seafele.
Next week, we've got more preview content of the class of 2020. We were going to make Oregon's women's predictions. We're going to have to save it, I guess. We're back Monday next week and the following week on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick because the Oregon men's basketball team has games on Thursday nights the next 2 weekends or the next 2 weeks. So back to Monday next week. So just a few days away, 3 or 4 days away from the next Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for joining us for Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick, the show for college recruiting fans with the inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Read Andrew's latest recruiting news in the Oregonian and Oregon Live, and listen for Andrew's updates throughout the week here on Portland's Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.